Welcome everyone through all time and space to an all new episode of Weebs on the Weekends, a podcast where we break down the anime news highlights of the week and give a retrospective look at an anime that premiered 10 years ago. On today's episode, we'll be talking about the 2013 anime film Berserk, the Golden Age arc, part 3, The Advent. Very weird title, but with us this episode is Gerard, coming back to talk about and finish up the Berserk series. Gerard, thank you for coming back.
I'm glad to be here. Your favorite otaku is back in the building.
My favorite otaku? Yeah, you're up there for sure. Yeah. I appreciate your perspective on things. So yes, one of my favorites for sure. So generally we ask about like how you doing and how has been your viewing habits for this year, but you've become a dad recently, so have you been keeping up with any animes worth mentioning?
I will say that my kid watches anime now as well. He doesn't know what's going on, but he does watch. My own taste this year, it's, as you know, it's been a slew of isekai dropping recently, along with a lot of second and third seasons, just continuations of good anime. I've been keeping up with Goblin Slayer, kind of fallen off of Demon Slayer a little bit, kind of shocked, and of course completed Attack on Titan finally.
Oh wow, yeah, that was big news. And I am on part one, I believe it is. So I'm a little bit behind. I know that they were still in Eldia, essentially. So yeah, I'm looking forward to catching up. I think I'm going to watch it with a group of friends to actually finish off the series, because I was very much late on Attack on Titan. But do you have an anime of the year contender right now?
I'm going to go ahead and say, okay, so I'm biased. So I'll say it is between the Fate, Strange Fake teaser, Hell's Paradise, and Vinland Saga, and Free Ren.
Whoa, okay, you're watching way more anime than I estimated. Okay, good.
Fair.
All right, so yeah, Free Ren just dropped this winter, so it's into like 9 or 8 episodes right now. So yeah. And you have what was the other one I was like gonna say?
Vinland Saga
part, yeah, season 2. Whoa, just blew my mind with like everyone that was talking about it was saying, it's not as good as the first season. You know, Askeladd's not here. It's like changed genres. And I was like, okay, going into it, like, oh, okay, well, I guess I can be disappointed. And then it just blew my mind for how much the character writing just shines through, even though not all of the things that attracted you the first season were removed, but it's still the core of what makes Vinland Saga such a good story. So yeah, boo on the people that said don't watch it.
Oh yeah, you can't listen to them. I love that anime. It's very well written. One of the best written anime this year for sure.
Gotcha. How about Jujutsu Kaisen? Are you falling behind on that?
I am not falling behind. I'm actually up to date. I enjoy it. I'm even up to date with the manga. No comment.
Okay, cool. No comment.
But yeah, I've been enjoying it. I feel like I was hoping they'd give a little bit more screen time to some incidents, but I've been enjoying it. I love Jujutsu Kaisen. They're doing very well.
Gotcha, wonderful. Yeah, the other big titles this year were, like, of course, Jobless Reincarnation came back for season 2. A couple of the Reincarnated as Slime movies dropped. No, wait, sorry. That was last year. The movie dropped, and then most recently another special drop because season 3 starts next year. And yeah, there's a lot of sequels like Bungo Stray Dogs, season 4 and 5, Tokyo Revengers, as well as 2 and 3. And there's just so many to
Castlevania.
Name. Castlevania Nocturne. Oh, yes. Yeah, I would put that up there on anime of the year. But yeah, enough with the presents, because we can go on and on with that, because getting to Berserk, because that's why you're here. You're an avid fan, and I am mixed on how I feel experiencing the eclipse for the first time. So we'll get to that in a little bit. But to give some feedback on what we have covered, at least so far, with the Berserk film trilogy from 2012 to 2013, we're talking today about the third part, which is called The Advent or The Descent. I was actually getting like confused on some of the labeling for this movie. But it ran 113 minutes. Again, same studio, 4 degrees Celsius. We've talked about them with the previous two films on episode 26 with the first movie, Egg of the King, and episode 93, which was Battle of Daltry. And even CO 4 degrees Celsius did the newest version of Thundercats, which we talked about on episode 62. So, Gerard, can you give us a overview of the first two films? Do you remember where they left off?
Yes. So the first film, if you want to kind of structure it, the story, the main character, as you guys know, is Guts. The first film was going over his becoming part of the Band of the Hawk, his going from warrior dog, you know, warmonger to becoming part of a team. The second movie was him finding out how to be an individual, right? And at the end of that, that's where we kind of lose Griffith. He has to go on his own. Griffith does not take that well. And we end up with Griffith getting caught and Guts on his own. Band of the Hawk basically caught and dispersed. So that's kind of where we're leaving off here. And where we're picking up is the point where Griffith is, you know, at his lowest after committing some atrocities on the princess.
Right, which is, yeah, atrocity. Well, it's, okay, so there's a lot to discuss. Yeah, so, yeah, Berserk as, like, you know, it's easy to say that Berserk is, like, a monolith in the manga community, and from the failed attempts with the... Actually, that's not even fair to say that they're failed attempts. They're just not what Berserk fans wanted. So you had the first adaptation in 1997, which had 25 episodes, and, you know, I do want to go rewatch that because it does have that 90s flair and aesthetic to it, which, you know, does look a little bit outdated to compared to today's standards. You had this
one
in 2012 2013, which focused a little bit on mixed media or mixed medium of CGI and traditional cell work, and then in 2016, which kind of blew my mind that they went in this direction with heavy emphasis on 3D CG when given to studios, which was CO Jemba and Millicent, which are studios that specialize in that. But that was such a wild decision to say, like, not to keep up with the same aesthetic choice. But with 2012-13, we do have, like, some dated CGI. So talking about adaptation-wise, how did you feel wrapping up with this trilogy that it did?
I'm gonna be honest with you. I hated it. Like, everything about the CGI. Like, I'm a classic fan. I like, if you're gonna use CGI, use it sparingly. An example being like Demon Slayer with the fish with the kind of scissor hands.
Yes, they were
weird, probably unnecessary, and, you know, obviously they were CGI. They kind of just looked like they didn't belong. When you have a hand-drawn or like a just regular animation of that style. Berserk in the 2012 remake and all episodes going forward, it was a odd kind of clunky mix of 2D animation and CGI blends. And it just didn't, how they did it, how they went about it, just wasn't, like, it looked, it seemed like they didn't want to put the investment down to pick one side or the other, because CGI saves about, like, I think it's 20,000 or like 40,000 an episode.
Yes.
And, you know, using a blend of CGI and 2D animation, it sounds good in theory. In 2012, it sounded good. It just didn't pan out. And those are my feelings on it.
Gotcha. And it was distracting to the point. It's like, not even just adapting a beloved series for you, but it was distracting, because in CGI, at least in, you know, more modern 2020 terms, it's called invisible CGI, meaning that you can't really tell. I mean, Marvel kind of pioneered that kind of technology, but yeah, for animation studios, especially with the Japanese production schedule, you can't give the time to make CGI look good unless that was from the, you know, the initial plans to make a good CGI studio. Gohans, which is known for their very nausea-inducing anime. I think Gohans is the studio name, and then Handshakers was kind of the anime that set that standard for, like, bad reputation that the studio got. But, you know, in 2018, there's an anime called Land of the Lustrious, which does that mix.
Wow.
Mix animations very well with CGI and 2D traditional cell shading. And it always works best when it's blended like that. But in Berserk in 2012, you have whole scenes. So we did talk about cost-cutting measures and like giant epic scenes with the cavalry and militaries. But then you have like moments that are supposed to be very intimate, I guess, in this final film that kind of get you get pulled out of it because you're noticing it too much. So do you see that there was a increase of CGI use in the third movie?
Yes, it was. So it looked awkward and dated, like compared to like the rough imagery that you had in like the 97 anime. Mm-hmm. There was just too many technical flaws, and they were very apparent in this one. Like it's supposed to enhance like the magical elements of what you're watching, like the things that are not completely natural. But in this one, it almost threw them in your face, mm-hmm. and told you to eat it, anime. And I didn't really, it just took away from the experience for me, because I, you know, having watched the older stuff, having read the anime or having read the manga, like, you know, kind of what to expect. It's drawn well. Mm-hmm. It suffered kind of similar to the story of the anime on Netflix, Ajin. Mm-hmm. Beautifully drawn. But when you convert it over to CGI, it just doesn't have the same impact.
Right, yeah. Because a lot of the emotional, I don't know if superiority of what makes the Golden Age so memorable. So maybe starting from a ground zero point, but do you think like the Golden Age arc is like one of the best written arcs in all of manga history? Like, how do you think it stands up if you would put in a tier list? Because that's what kind of leaves this trilogy like really in like left behind. It feels dated, or it's like, oh, I wouldn't recommend this to anyone, because this is the moment where it's supposed to be most resonant with the audience, but it's not because of the animation. So is the Golden Age arc one of the best arcs in manga?
So I'm going to say yes, and maybe not the best, but I will say foundational. Yes. Hmm. You know, like, there's nothing that exists as the best that didn't have a foundation that was a bit lesser refined, right? Mm-hmm. The thing that keeps Berserk relevant is due to like its uncompromising storytelling. Like, it has mm-hmm. rich character development. It explores like very, very dark and like mature themes for like, you know, and you can relate to that as an adult, as a gothic teenager, as, you know, the someone back at that time that read manga. Even to this day, you know, like, the darker themes kind of stick out. It's part of our culture now. And this was very much a gruesome, like, but direct storytelling of like just struggle and strife, you know, and how, you know, battle and how experience life is really unending until you hit the final chapter, you know. And Guts was the poster child for that. He was the poster child for struggle until you get to the end, you know. And he also, they fleshed out his darker side, his human side, you know, through storytelling. I'm not going to really throw too much out there, but you know, they really fleshed that character out, fleshed the story arc out, fleshed out the villains. And at some points you weren't sure who the monster was. And I feel like that's why it's just like that type of storytelling, that type of impact that you could leave on a crowd or on a reader or even an anime watcher, if, you know, they were to animate it correctly. That's what makes it so foundational.
Yeah, yeah, that's completely fair, because there is a mixture of emotions when it comes to what's foundational, what's my favorite, and what's the best. Because I definitely hear a lot of conversations that, you know, for example, just to say, oh, Dragon Ball Z is good. Okay, yeah, subjective as that is, of course, to say something's good or bad, but something that gets over, you know, not overstated is that how foundational it is, how Toriyama, like, drew his fight scenes and how choreography works in that. And it's like, you get, if you just watch the anime, you get, like, dudes punching each other. You don't really get a good sense of why other mangaka study Dragon Ball or Dragon Ball Z specifically. Same thing with the Berserk, with all of its inspirations replicated throughout, you know, decades and other properties, be video games or mangas, American comics, whatever it might be. You lose kind of sight of what made Berserk so foundational. And do you think that gets translated over into the third film? Because for the 100 and, you know, roughly 20 minutes of the film, how much of it is really spent on the eclipse? And again, trying to talk around what the eclipse is, but did you think how the brutality, how the emotional trauma that happens to Guts is presented properly, or is it portrayed correctly that you wanted it? Did it work the same way, essentially?
So for what they did at the time when I watched it for the first time, I thought this is all they could do. And it was still a good storytelling. Like the issue with translating Berserk, like just adapting it into animation, is that you have to condense all of the things that make Berserk so good into something that make Berserk watchable, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's a lot of intricate character development, and like throughout the time they spend together, their relationships, like how they speak to each other, like some of the how they treat each other, like the small intricate and very complex interactions are left out because it's hard to animate that kind of thing. You know, mm-hmm. even given that amount of time, it would have taken probably three times that amount of time to animate like just the intricacies of their written relationships and exchanges. So I feel like that kind of took away from the impact generally mm-hmm. for, you know, the eclipse. But I think that they did their best, and I think it showed that they, you know, they did what they could. And I feel like it still did have a good impact, but overall, that was just a hard thing to animate, I feel like.
Yeah, that's fair, because specifically, I think we can get into a little nitty-gritty of what happens in the third movie, because I've complained, at least for, you know, the 2 hours that we've talked about this movie up to now, is that I dislike the character of Casa, and I never got up to this point why Guts cared about her. And do you think that's because they've missed out on some of those like intimate conversations, or that character to character development that's fleshed out in the manga but doesn't get enough time to shine in the anime or the films?
Yes, I think that's exactly why. Like, they simplified the character development and the plot, and that oversimplification, it made the hits, they just didn't, like, the hits didn't land as hard. There was no, like, people just hated Casca, and she doesn't get any more likable. Like, she's a plot tool, you know, for a lot of this. And even like after the movie, she's kind of a plot tool until she becomes kind of more of her the character she's meant to be. But, you know, you wouldn't be able to tell, kind of like, she just seemed kind of like an annoying character to have around that has like too much to prove if you're just watching the anime.
Right, because when you go into at least the third movie, or the third film, sorry. Yeah, even if you don't know what's going to happen in the third movie, you definitely feel like the lack of connection or emotional investment to the Band of Hawks. So at the end of the second film, you get their banishment by the King of Midland, and they get ambushed and, you know, assaulted, whatever it might be, to the point of like, oh, now they're scattered to the four winds, and Griffith is left all by himself in the tower to be tortured. So when they show up in the third film to rescue Griffith, you're like, okay, why do I care that they showed up, and why do I care what happens to them, the bad stuff that will be happening to them? But there is a very poignant part of that setup to the third film, is that when you do rescue Griffith, he's on the edge of desperation. It's a very good portrayal of what does a year of torture look like. And he even does an act of, was the act of Griffith trying to kill himself, or like, get right to my point, but like, do you think that was well done? Because like, that's something that really gets you invested inside his character. It's like, okay, I understand Griffith, and that whatever happens after this point, I'm in the mind frame of he has suffered to this extreme point that whatever he does is not quote unquote justified. I'm trying to walk this very thin line, because
they make you question the villain. Like, they make you question the villain. Like, is this reasonable? Right. Like, that's the thing. And the fact that you have to question it kind of speaks to the writing of it. That's why people love it so much. Like, okay, they're not going to fault a guy at the edge of his life, in the end of his wits, you know, trying to do something to survive. That's human, right? Like that's something that people understand. That if you have somebody who's just like, yeah, I'm just going to do this for the power of friendship, then no, like it's not going to be something that, you know, lasts as a foundational aspect. Like even Dragon Ball Z, like you mentioned, was not foundationally about the power of friendship. You know, the spirit bomb was a plot tool we'd never see anymore. You know, like at the time, we you know, that was something that needed to be said and shown, you know, because in one of the movies it shows like the whole world, everybody of every nation, you know, before he does a spirit bomb. And I think it's like the world tree or something like that. But the point is, they show the whole world. And at that point, you know, it was needed because there was a lot of tension in the world at the time. So like, cool, you know, that's it's just like comics. But for this one, for Berserk, where it shines is they address humanity in a way that I feel like no other anime has. And when it comes to Griffith's attempt there to end his life, like at a certain point, you can't blame him. And when he goes like, hey, you know, if I can choose, you know, my own path, well, I'm not gonna, you know, spoil it, but if I could choose my own path, then I will, because look, I if it's left to anybody else, I'd be dead or I'll be miserable. So like that's what makes it like I'm not gonna say anything he did was justified. Like as the bad guy, like that you could see it coming as the bad guy, or as the guy that's like not bad guy, but like the guy who's been through it the worst. Like you've been put through the ringer. Like you might have made some mistakes, but you've been put through the ringer. That guy, I can expect him to make some crazy choices because he just, you know, he's not right in the head. So I feel like how they portrayed that, I feel like it was perfect because it made you wonder, like, is he out of his mind or has he just hit his limit?
There's a conflation that happens between what's justifiable and what's understandable, and he's walking this very close line. And something that comes up, and as I'm learning more about the Berserk community, is that Griffith and Femto are two different people. And do you subscribe to that? I don't even know if it's a theory, but do you believe that Griffith died? Okay, so he gets rescued by the Hawks, he gets rescued by Guts, and then the group gets pulled into. Does the other dimension have a name, or is that just the demon dimension or whatever?
We can just call it the demon dimension for now.
Okay, cool. Yeah, and they get met with God Hand and the apostles, which are archdemons, and offer Griffith like a deal, essentially turning him into a demon, getting power, all these. He makes the deal with the devil, of course. But do you think Griffith dies then, or is he Griffith just called Femto? Because like when I finished the movie, I was like, this feels so just left field that I didn't see it coming. And like you said, like you understand, or you know that his actions are understandable, but do you think these are two different people when they go into that dimension? He becomes Femto. Is he a different character, or is that just Griffith?
So it's still Griffith, but a change in his values, right? Because as you see Griffith, he starts out pure white. Everyone loves him. He's like fighting for his people. He has his own goals, but he's not sacrificing people for them, right? And then, you know, he kind of loses his way. You know, Guts makes him lose his way a bit. And he realizes that he needs to commit wholeheartedly to that goal of his. And at that point, he makes a certain choice. And when he becomes Femto, that represents a fundamental change in his character and the role in the and his role in the story and his morality. Like if you think about it, like the moon, like the sun is a shining star. It is eclipsed, and in that darkness is where Femto comes out of Griffith. You know, that's where he becomes, and he just stays there. That's where he stays. And so I feel like Femto still is Griffith. Like you can still be like Ted Bundy. People liked him, but he was a murderer. Like people like Griffith, but now he's a demon. Like it's still Griffith, in my opinion.
So I kind of credit that to one of the weaknesses, at least I've seen it and not reading the manga, is that I get the parallels between Guts and Griffith. So like it's so blatant in your face that you can't ignore it. Like he's the shadow to Griffith's light, and he's the not black hole to like Griffith's sun, but essentially they infect each other with their different shades of humanity, essentially, and everything that Griffith builds up in Guts almost takes away from Griffith. And it's very weird that when you get to the part of him making the deal with God's hand or God's hand that you're like, oh, I don't see why he made the choice. And yeah, like you were saying, like he gets pushed to the edge of torture and that changes a man. But I don't think the audience got enough time to sit with Griffith or get a good use of like narration or some way to get inside his thinking, that it just gets sprung on you that he's going to betray all of his comrades, the guy that he cares about most, just because of this push to his limits of insanity. So I guess I wanted to talk about action that he takes after he becomes Femto. I'm trying to dance around it. But yeah, he sexually assaults Casca, and that seems like something he only does because Guts is there. Is that a good read from what you've seen in the films and the manga, that he's only doing that out of spite for Guts? Because like what you just explained about Griffith's change in morality and his principles and his drive, it doesn't seem to align with that action, and it just seems a little bit more for shock value.
It's a couple things. So it's a demonstration of power and a severance from humanity is how a lot of people used to take that. Because, you know, as you embrace your demonic nature, it's like, okay, cool. Well, I could do whatever I want. You know, I'm not held by these morals you have. Cool. And then it's a betrayal. It's betrayal of trust for Guts and for Casca, and revenge on Guts for leaving. So Griffith felt betrayed at the time. And so he took that out on Guts by doing this in front of him, because she's deeply connected to Guts, and Griffith knew that. And that would hurt him, because at that point, Guts was in love. And that would hurt Guts as much as he could humanly be hurt. Like, that was the lowest Guts would get, because you can fight Guts until he died, he'd be fine. But if you took something he cared about, then bang, like, that's the way to hurt Guts. Like, Griffith felt like he was hurt. And it was kind of a dominance complex is how I view it.
And again, I think that's just a credit to the strong writing that kind of gets left out or gets, you know, cut for time. Because it is, I believe, 337 minutes total for the runtime of all three films together. And it does feel a little bit in the same vein as what Disney has done with some of its Star Wars properties, or even if you want to extend it to the Marvel TV shows, is that you're compressing too much given the span of the story. So I think, again, the estimation of how much story can be told for Berserk is not something that can be told in 337 minutes. That's why you get the two other adaptations in 25 and 24 episodes, respectfully. So with the love between Casca and Guts, that's just something that doesn't seem to be emphasized at all. So it's like, when it happens, I'm like, why does he care? So is that something that I'm missing out on with the films, or is that somewhere in the films is that I'm not seeing?
It's something you're missing out with on the films. It's not portrayed correctly in this telling. Because there's a lot that happens when they're in the forest. There's a lot that happens, like, for the movies leading up, there's a lot that happens when, like, she's fighting and she's winded. Like, you know, there's a reason, like, there's a lot of exchanges, and it doesn't just happen once. There's a lot of exchanges where Guts is questioning, like, why isn't she at her best? Like, why isn't she doing this? Why isn't she doing what she normally does? Like, he doesn't know anything. And, like, you know, his journey to understand her and her journey to understand him, like, he's never had a connection like that. And I guess Griffith was a little jealous of that, but I feel like he maybe wanted that same connection with Guts. I think a lot of people have questioned, you know, him, but like he couldn't get the same, like, they couldn't show that connection in the movie, I feel like, because you had to condense so many like expressions and points of conversation. Like, if you read it, it's a lot of conversation. When I say it's storytelling, but also like it's a character driven like story. So you miss so many of the finer details to where when you condense it into a movie, you can't get that across the same way.
I understand. Because Guts Berserk, Vinland Saga, and Vagabond are kind of the, you know, old time or the pinnacle of manga writing with story focused characters. And, you know, why I talked about Vinland Saga so much at the beginning is because it reminds me so much of what I wanted to see in Berserk here with these three films. Is like, I have this expectations of how it should play out because I've grown up with it as this untouchable masterpiece. And I think you've said it before, maybe once, is that, you know, Berserk is a masterpiece and you can't really shorthand, you can't truncate any of the story because all of it flows together. Everything has a cause and effect. Everything is intertwined. So I think a failure of at least these three films is that emotional connection that you don't have with the characters, and that it doesn't feel like Berserk, if that makes sense. Like, the Guts in the manga, even if you compare him to his anime counterparts, this is maybe the least Guts version of him. And there's other things to be focused on in the story, but it does, after spending all this time with these three films, it's like, I feel like I wasted my time almost. I think with the third film, so we get through like the transition into the demon. So the Griffiths get saved. They get transferred into the demon dimension. He makes a deal with the devil. He assaults Casca. And then you get saved by... Okay, so I guess to talk about Guts a little bit in that moment, he gets mortally wounded. Well, mortally, he doesn't die. He gets robbed of his eye. He gets robbed of his left arm. Yeah. So with him being like physically wounded, mentally wounded, spiritually wounded, where does, so like, to sell this to people that finish the three films, why do you care about Guts at this point? Because like all those things happen to him. You feel bad for Casca. She's kind of in this comatose state afterwards. You get reintroduced to the Skull Knight who saves them, but where the story leaves Guts, he's on a journey of revenge, essentially. So why do I want to keep following Guts after this point? Like, from at least a anime or the film standpoint, is there anything good about how Guts has been portrayed to keep you like, oh, go read the manga now, essentially? Or is this just a bad introduction to him as a character?
So I feel like these three movies are the total introduction to, they're like the prequel to Berserk, in my opinion. Like, they come at the beginning to tell, to, it's like the first season of Game of Thrones. It's world building, because the rest of the story is now based on the results of the eclipse, right? So now it's like, all right, so what is he going to do? Like, the story, like, there's, everyone's dead, but these two people, what are they going to do? So if at this point you like the themes, like the dark themes and whatnot, and you like this grind to see just where this person's going to go, it's like the complete opposite of like a character like Superman, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, no one cares if you have the power to win every fight. Like, no one cares. But if it's just like a human and it's just the struggle of day to day grind, which all of us understand, and, you know, just darker, then you watch it. You know, it's relatable at that point. It's like, you know, is this ever going to be over? I say that every day from 8 to 5, you know, and it's gruesome, you know, and now that I have a kid, it's like, I got a Casca with me that I had to like keep after she, you know, after the event, how she becomes kind of, she's mentally broken. She just loses. She's like now in a childlike state. So it's like, all right, so now you're just a single dad, you know, trying to keep the monsters away, and that's it. And you know, it is relatable in a way for so many, and that's why I feel like people love it so much. That's what gets people involved, because they want to know, like, how is this guy going to win such overwhelming odds with all of the handicaps that he gets at the beginning of his story,
right? Because in the same way as, again, bringing it back to the Vinland Saga comparisons, the Golden Age arc definitely feels like a prequel. Like you said, it feels like a wiping of the slate. Like, you build up the world itself. Like, you're like, okay, these are the end boss goals. This is your protagonist. This is your antagonist. This is the situation that he's in. This is who he is as a character. But again, like, the Zero you know, story. Even if you look at I cannot say that word ever. JJK. Yeah, you start with Yuta, but his story gets finished essentially in the Zero chapter, and then you get transferred over to Yuji. Same thing with Thorfinn and Vinland Saga. Like, the beginning of his revenge tale that ends, and then who else is Thorfinn after the revenge, essentially. So in the berserk way that you get zeroed out at the end of the Golden Age arc, because there is more to do, you're not just being set on a quest with a character. Essentially, you're starting the adventure from ground zero, because, like you said, it's the struggle of reaching that goal. And again, that's very shonen feeling. But the thing that makes Berserk really the standout, and why so many other properties have taken from it, is that you don't really see adult themes handled this way. I think you even said that very succinctly before about the aspects of it. What makes it foundational is that it's foundational because it's talking about a genuine human struggle that a lot of animes don't tackle, because, you know, most animes, I believe it's around 55 or 60% are shonen and shoujo, you know, for younger audiences. But then you get the seinens and the what's the girl equivalent, josei demographics, and you're like, oh, this is something that I was not ready for, essentially. And Berserk is one of those stories. So you talked about this a little bit before, but do you still feel that Berserk is relevant to read or watch despite it being so foundational? Because I only played Elden Ring for its memorial to the author when he passed away last year. So it's like, there are too many things nowadays, too much content that has been taken from Berserk, that do you feel like Berserk is still necessary or relevant to read?
I will say it's not as necessary because we're so we've diverged so far from it, but it is relevant. Because there is never, because good storytelling is always going to be timeless. Always. Like, we have, you know, the Screen Actors and Writers Association, you know, they're all up in arms right now. And if you don't have good storytelling, which is what, you know, a lot of people, which is the problem now, then you won't have, you know, anything. You'll end up with the fall of entertainment, with the fall of anime, with the fall of any kind of imagination. So I feel like, while it might not be as relevant, like a necessity to read, while it might not be a necessity, it is relevant for sure.
Again, like the hero's journey is kind of like Joseph Campbell's portrayal of a hero. It's like Guts follows that to a T, or at least in an interesting way that you wouldn't expect, because it's dealing with, again, like not the childish idea of what a hero is. And again, like what you said a little earlier about Guts does walk this, I don't even know if he's an anti-hero, but he does feel so mature as a hero. He feels, you know, worn down, he feels defeated, and he's just persisting through the world. And like what you said about, yeah, it's the grind of life. It's just like, you keep getting back up, you go to bed, you keep getting back up, you go to bed, and you kind of get in this meditative state, and that's the kind of thing that brings you back, or at least, again, speaking as someone that hasn't read the manga, I think that's something I'm projecting. It's like, I can see where this story goes. And a lot of stories don't do that anymore. Moshishi does it. Firin does it most recently. There's some few other animes that like take its time. It's like, okay, you're more invested in the character because you understand that they're flawed, and that Guts flaw is, I don't know. What is Guts flaw that makes him so endearing as a character?
His lack of self-control is one thing. Like he is like a baby when he starts out. He just knows violence. It's like watching Kenpachi learn how to use Zanbakuto for real. And then watching him learn how to, you know, use Bankai or like something like that. It's like when you have a character that is just unbridled rage and violence, and you refine them to care and to survive, like not just survive, but to live, then I feel like if you've done that and you've convinced me of it, then that's a well-written story.
Yeah, like, so I say like he walks this line between hero and villain, but it's just that the world he lives in is violence. And, you know, I think I've seen just a few episodes of the 1997 version and comparing it to this one in 2012, it's like, they put a lot more emphasis on Guts's upbringing in the 97 version. Like, they show you the brutality that his father, or was that his stepfather?
That was his stepfather. Well, first it was a stepfather, then it was someone he was sold to.
Right, yeah, yeah, because he was a mercenary from, like, so young, like, just as he could be able to hold a sword, essentially. So all his life is violence, and that's kind of what sticks you with Guts, or, you know, sticks you along with the ride, that he doesn't outwardly hurt people, he doesn't try to end lives, but his sense of what is good and bad, or is askew from everyone else's normality, even though they're living in the same world. So he's getting hunted down by the God's hands, evil creatures, and, like, he has to indulge in violence and darkness, but he has to keep a piece of him intact, or he would just, you know, unalive himself, probably, because it's such a, not an easy choice to make, but the author puts him in a choice of why bother. And I think that's the relevant part of the story. Yeah. It's like, okay, why bother living when everything doesn't work out for you or is against you? And that's the tenacity, I guess, of Guts as a character, which, again, I'm speculating on, but it does seem like that's what was the intent of the films.
Yeah, it will, like I said, the films are a prequel to his story. Like, even for the anime called Berserk, there's an item called the Berserker Armor, like the namesake of the anime, right? And that's not even introduced. And, like, that whole thing, like, just that whole plot point or plot tool is not even something that you know, you get to have experience with. And that's a main part of the story going forward. So all, with just the prequel in hand, it is kind of a tough sell to get you to get a person to continue watching this unless they were invested in the character. And if that happened through the movies or through the 97 anime, then, you know, good on you. But I could understand how that would be kind of a hard selling point at this point for the 2012 reincarnation of this.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, because in 2022, wow, that was last year. But in 2022, there was a memorial edition, basically a remastered of the 2012 version. So it's not, and there has been at least an upward tick of reboots and reimaginings of stories just in 2023, where there was Rurouni Kenshin that took more of a serious look at the original manga source material, because the one in the 90s was a little bit more jovial, was a little bit more lighthearted. Oh, yeah. Same thing with Trigun. Stampede came out this year with
I couldn't.
Oh, you couldn't? For the CGI reason?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was more character driven, because, again, the comedy of the 90s shined through a little bit stronger, but this was more of a brother family dynamic or drama story. And I did appreciate that perspective change of turning this Wild West sci-fi story into more of a family dynamic story. So if you were to, okay, not to put so much pressure on you, but how would you see Berserk being reimagined or rebooted in, like, 2024 if it was going to come out?
I feel like they'd take the opposite approach and make it more jovial, but start out very dark. A good example would be, like, Goblin Slayer. Some other comparisons to, like, Guts and Griffith like characters would be, like, let's say Lelouch be Britannia, right? Lelouch would be a good candidate there. Like, I feel like people would just reimagine the character more than they would the anime. Like, for anime standards, going from the 90s to now, it's, like, less jovial, more serious. And for the serious ones, it's less serious, more jovial. And I think that, like, they just have reimagined the character a lot, and that's basically it. You know, they I don't think they're gonna rewrite something similar to Berserk. I just couldn't see it happening.
There is also an anime recently that kind of caught me by surprise, because it has a moment that reminds me so much of Madoka Magica with the shock value of it, called Kingdom of Ruin.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, in the first episode, there's a really violent murder execution, essentially, that is of not of equivalent nature to what happens in the Eclipse. There are elements of Berserk that seems unadaptable, even though that's really not taboo word, but there are things that lend itself better to still frames of in a manga versus animated motion of a anime. So what other things do you think that would be? What other aspects do you think Berserk wouldn't do well translated? Because like you're talking about rebooting it or rewriting it in some kind of way that makes it adaptable to today, but are there things that can't be adapted? Like it will never be the manga?
Given today's standards for production, I don't think, like, and the timelines associated with anime, like you don't see a lot of anime that flesh out their narrative stories that well, like Vinland Saga. Or like you'll see one Vinland Saga every 5 years, and then like before that it was like Death Note, and Code Geass was one as well. They don't come often to where you can take the time and really explain the characters. Like, have you seen the second season of Vinland Saga?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm just gonna make it very vague. The guy with the curved sword, you remember him?
Yeah.
So how much of his backstory do you think we would have got if it was a different anime? If it was any other anime, like, you would have had the question of, what's he doing here? He's real good. And it never would have been explained, even to the end of the anime. He would have been a character that died off screen or, you know, lost his relevance. But, you know, in stories like that, like Thorfinn is Guts, just a different struggle. Like, Thorfinn is trying to find his value and his point in life, and then once he finds his purpose, he's gonna go for it. That's how the story goes, you know. Like, he didn't have one. His parents, like, he was in a bad situation. He was a child soldier, sounds just like Guts, you know. From some reason, his parents were dead. He ended up a child soldier. He killed a lot of people. Only knew the blade for the majority of it, and then the only difference is, all right, Thorfinn's going to learn to do without it. Guts is going to learn to live with it, because he just can't do without it, because he has to protect someone. Like, Thorfinn's on his own. Guts got, like, a Casca that's out of her mind. You know, so, like, I feel like you see this. It's like a type of anime in and of itself. Like, it's in its own genre with things similar to, like, Vinland Saga, Death Note, where you have a lot of communication. Even just the character's thoughts are explained pretty well in stuff like Death Note, but you don't see that often anymore. People don't really stay and watch those as much as they do stuff like Demon Slayer. So I don't see Berserk coming out now as it was in the manga and being as successful as it could be.
Gotcha. Yeah, because the ones that, as you were speaking, I was thinking about Monster, which is more of a detective story. And we do get a lot more detective stories nowadays than the action adventure fantasies that isn't an isekai. So why I brought up Frieren, why I focused on that a little bit more in the opening, because that does seem to be the Berserk type of storytelling. Same thing with Vivi. Florence Song that came out 2 years ago. Same thing with like Violet Evergarden, but you don't really see. And I think this does something to do with the mentality of audience, that you don't want to see a contemplative berserker kind of story. I mean, Vox Machina has, like, you know, a D&D campaign around one of these type of characters, but for the solo story of a wandering samurai or warrior, like with Bagamon, which still hasn't got, like, some of the classic mangas that have, like, been a lot of artists nowadays' inspirations are, like, not getting adapted. We've seen 90s animes of, which I mentioned before, Rurouni Kenshin and Trigun, but we're not seeing, like, 90s mangas really tackled in a way that you expect. So it might have been a time of past relevance, like the 2016 was maybe the final chance in the medium of anime to tackle Berserk, and they just blew it because they were trying to try new technologies for something that didn't deserve it, or like it deserved more than a brand new technology to pioneer something to try it out on, because those studios eventually go on to the 3D CGI studios went on to really good animes from the past 2 years. I'm a Spider, So What? And there was another isekai. Oh, Cheat Skill. Isekai Cheat Skill. I Became the Strongest at Level Zero. I think that was the... Yeah. All those isekai crazy name, long titles. But yeah, like, so if you look at a 3D CGI anime like I'm a Spider So What, you're like, oh, it took them 6-8 years to get to the point of like, oh, now it looks flawless. Now it looks invisible. Like, you can see that it's not 2D traditional, but it's no longer a distraction to use to it. So I think it is just a time of Berserk has been passed. It's like, it's a masterpiece that can't be touched. So it's a very weird place to be as a Berserk fan, especially with, is the manga ended or is it ending? I forget what the status is right now.
I thought it ended, but that's just telling you how long it's been since Berserk has, like, that might have been like a year ago that I thought it ended.
Right, yeah, yeah. So at least on Wikipedia, it said it's still continuing to present day.
Yeah, the traditional story ended because the guy left. Like, the tradition, the creator is no longer part of the team.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah. Yeah, he passed away. But yeah, I thought there was someone continuing on his place, at least for a few more
There's
chapters.
A team continuing on his place. But, you know, if you're going to call it true Berserk, it really depends. I feel like some of the fans are split, but they are continuing on his behalf. But I say it ended back then, just because that's the story I was keeping up with.
So I guess to close off talk about Berserk, and you kind of said it's the worst, and you know, the reception of the film, at least from like a critical standpoint, like it only grossed a third of the first film, so I think that kind of says a little bit, gives a little credit to like the word of mouth of the third film. It's like, this wasn't what the audience was expecting, and I don't think it was that something that disgusted audience members. I think it was just a thing of execution, because then you go to critics from like the Western film canon, like from Kotaku, for example, said that the eclipse was like, it surpassed the manga. So I was like, oh, okay. So
it was more gruesome. Like, the stuff that happened after the eclipse was far more gruesome and uncomfortable than what happened in the manga. So it's
more brutal. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And was that, do you think that was necessary, or do you think that was, again, it's really hard for me, especially as I don't like gore, blood, violence, horror. It's like, what is shock value versus what is necessary and impactful for the story? So do you think that more gruesome portrayal was necessary or warranted, or was it done in equal measure in the manga, and that the anime, the film, just did it more because they could?
I think they did it more to provide shock value and get people like to believe that this was going to be closer to what they expected. But they just overreached, I feel like.
Okay, overreached. Yeah, they were like, oh, okay, so we have space to make this a little bit more impactful. Because it doesn't feel, at least as from a production standpoint, that they were going to intend to do more after this. Because it's a film trilogy of the Golden Arc Age, of course. You know, we don't get another Berserk series by a different studio for another 3 years after that. So now that we're in 2023... and the last one was in 2017, or sorry, not 2017, but 2017. You're like, oh, we should have had another Berserk adaptation 3 years ago. So if there was one, it would be happening either a few years ago or very soon. So it's very interesting that it left probably a worse taste in a lot of fans' collective taste buds. Because, like, have you seen the 2017 version?
Yeah. It was not great, but I'm a fan that stuck with it just to see how it'd be. And I love the story, but it was animated so poorly.
Yeah, so it can't really get over that. Yeah, and that's going to get, again, that sense of animation that's out of sync with modern senses of animation style or quality, is that the further you get away from that, you're like, okay, well, then it's unenjoyable no matter how good the story is or how good the characters is. It is a medium of visuals, and if you're not making use of that, then why bother? And I think that's the thing that a lot of fans, at least, and even from production studio standpoint, is like, yeah, they always have the manga, and it's an untouched classic because it is what it is. And then you have the death of the author. It's like, okay, when do you retackle it again? Because all those elements that get taken out of Berserk, say from the Souls games or other animes, mangas like Attack on Titan and Castlevania, Demon Slayer, whatever it may be, they're like, okay, we can pull from this classic and then still pay homage to the original with either calling someone like a black swordsman or having a great sword like Guts. or even like training videos on YouTube. It's like, oh, lifting Guts Sword. I forgot what that series was, but it was like trying to lift Guts Sword for like 100 days or something. But the mark that Berserk has on the anime community, manga community, can't be removed regardless of the quality of the anime. So I think that's kind of the takeaway. So do you think that this is the best place to start? So to talk about the end of, do you recommend it? Do you say that it can be reburied, stay buried? No one needs to have a copy of this. Do you think like this is the best way to start? Or is it like skip this, then go to the manga or go to the other versions of it?
I would say start with the 97. And if you want to read the manga, go for it. That's something I enjoyed far more than the anime. But that's what I will say.
Okay, okay, good. So I guess in like 4 years, we'll talk about the 30th anniversary of it. But okay, yeah, I'm going to say something similar is that I think it is on the side of an interesting study, especially from more of an academic point. It's like, oh, if you're an anime nerd, okay, here's the different versions of this classic story, this prime example of manga hype of like early 90s, 80s styles and inspiration and foundational to other dark fantasy genres. Same thing like with, is it Heavy Metal or Detroit Heavy Metal? Oh, no, sorry. Yep. That's I'm thinking about another manga, but Bastard came out this year with his season and then previously with the season one. But yeah, same thing of that is like, yeah, these are subjects that can still be touched and can be emphasized with either people that have taken elements from Berserk. Isn't really tackleable material for modern animation. So it's very interesting. So I'm going to say it can be reburied. Just I'm going to echo your point of go see the 1997 version. I'm going to do that myself. Yeah, that was Berserk Golden Age Arc 1, 2, and 3. And that wraps up the film trilogy. So how do you feel?
As a fan, and maybe a lot of fans say this, I feel like I was let down by that new by the new way they did it. Maybe if they were to make it more similar to, I guess I would have to say, sadly enough, if they were to make it more similar to like the first episode of Vinland Saga and just stay down that route, I feel like it would be a good, it would be a great anime to rewatch. But since they aren't going to reanimate it in that way, I'm going to have to give this a thumbs down. Sorry.
Is there anything that you would salvage from this? Because I hear like Berserk fans really love the music that occurs in the film trilogy. Is there like certain elements that you're saying, oh, see this scene or see this music or see parts of this? Or is there any like parts of this salvageable?
For this specific movie, I'm going to say I actually enjoyed the scene where, you know, the eclipse. I actually enjoyed the eclipse for my own reasons, of course, but at the beginning of the, like at the beginning of it, and maybe not the stuff with Casca, but like the, just the turning point of this is a fun adventure. I'm going to leave my friends to find my own peace. I come back to help my friends. Eclipse happens. I feel like that turning point always, it'll never not like hit me as like a wow, like that was a moment, like, you know, that was something to witness. Like I'll never forget that moment for watching that, and for that I will say thank you. You know, they did a very good job at that, but beyond that I have no comments.
And then I guess the last bit is like, okay, so of the three movies, is it all the same quality that you think, or is there like one that's superior than the other? Because, you know, with Lord of the Rings, like the first trilogy, you have the Fellowship, Towers, and then Return. Do you think it's like a similar situation that there's one significantly favored over the others that you like more than the others, or is it like similar all across the board, the same quality?
I think I liked, funny enough, like I think I liked the other ones for their own reasons, but I've liked the last one the most because of the shock value of the eclipse. Like that was not something that, had I not read it before, right? But even in like the first anime, that's something I did not see coming. And, you know, that's what set the pace for the rest of the anime and the rest of the manga. So I'll say just because of that moment, I like this one the most.
Yeah, because that's just a big, like that, it doesn't pull a punch, essentially. And if you're going in, yeah, if you're going into it for that, it's like, that's what it's supposed to, that's the point of it, right? It's like to punch you in the gut. Same thing with like other seinen properties. It's like, there's always this key moment that leaves you wanting more, or like saying, oh, this is why this isn't for kids. This is why anime is not for kids, essentially. All right, cool. Well, Drod, thank you so much for your time. It was a pleasure. Three Berserk films, back-to-back, essentially. And I do recommend to go check out those previous episodes, because we did gloss over, like, at least we summarized what happens in the first two, but we did have a lot more to say about each movie specifically, especially with Sam joining us with the other episodes. All right, so that is it. Drod, thank you. Anything to promote or push?
You know, everybody subscribe. I love this channel. Love these guys. They're great. And if you ever want the best anime content reviewed, this is where to be.
All right, that's kindness. Thank you. All right, that was us for Weebs on the Weekend. Peace.